¡Ale!
¡Sí, señor!
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. All right, Primo Hector, we're in the house. We are in vivo. We're puro en vivo.
Live and direct.
Oh, yeah. Estamos aquí. Estamos aquí a sus órdenes, everybody. Ricky is going to be joining us in a minute. He got a last minute visit from some friends. So we're going to get him on as soon as possible. But right now it's Primo Hector. Where are they going to find you, Primo?
At what the heck? It's right here on the screen. Who is it right?
Muy bien, muy bien. Muy bien. Está, you know, this is the bajo edition of our two-part series. The last week was arriba. This week is abajo.
And overrated, so, underrated.
Overrated, underrated. Last week we did the overrated. I mean, now this week we are doing the underrated. And I mean, Primos, it's you know, there were a lot of players on this list that I'm just fired up about. But first off, hey, you know what? Let's make sure everybody knows where to find us. You know, Hector, you already said your piece. I am at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter, and you can find us at Familia FFB on Twitter and Instagram, and familiaffb.com for original content. Keep up there. But also make sure you're subscribing on YouTube so you could see our pretty faces, our sonrisas. Yes, and you can see our Spanglish, see what we look like in person, live. So
all that good stuff.
Puro en vivo. So, heck, so this is a big weekend for us. 4th of July. You know, last year, remember we talked about Pacoima 4th of July, and
that was
a lot of fun. That was good times, baby. That
man,
was good
memories, man. Wow.
Oh, that was good. And you know, it's funny. I posted that article on 4th of July. You know, Pacoima 4th of July, and I couldn't believe how many people found it on Facebook and everything like that. And they were just nuts. They were like, "Oh my God, you took us back to, you know, when we were kids."
Red Devil fireworks and Freedom fireworks and classic stuff.
Ay, Dios mío. But that's fun. But, you know, for our familia, it's also a big day because it is a big tradition for our Familia Fantasy Football League, Familiology, to pick the order. And
yes,
not only is
draft order,
not only is the 4th of July going to be at your brother Hector Victor's house, but it's also going to be, since he's the commish, he gets to choose, you know, we get to choose the order. And, you know, I get a top four pick because I won the consolation bracket, or
whatever it was.
You know, everybody who didn't make the playoffs.
That's so, something, you know, it is a consolation.
By the way, heck, Primo, cheers. Salud. Salud. I know you got some.
I got some bourbon here, some Old Forester. Can't mess with that, man. It's a good stuff.
Oh, man. So, heck, where would you want? Before we get into that, I'm just gonna hype up our beat writer series real quick because earlier today we dropped the episode with Mary Kay Cabot, who is with the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and she was phenomenal. Dropped some major knowledge on the Browns and what they're gonna be doing this year, kind of like talking about the turnaround that they had this year from last year to with the new coaching staff and the great offensive line. Baker Mayfield really took a step forward. Just so much goodness that is coming out of there. And I got some fire episodes coming up later this week. Josh Briscoe from Arrowhead Report and Sports Illustrated is going to be joining us to talk some Chiefs. So
we're
going to be chopping it up about the Chiefs.
Yeah, man. You can't mess with that, man. Can't mess with that.
And also we've got Carmen Vitale, who is special to me because she interned at the Dodgers when I was there. And so she is now a writer for NFL.com, for Buccaneers.com, covering the Tampa Bay, the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And yes, she's the world champion. Yes.
She's phenomenal. She's got great insight. And I got to tell you, you know, it's been kind of cool to just to highlight minorities. We obviously had the compas on the beat. covering the Chargers. Gilberto Manzano and Fernando Ramirez had a couple. We've had a couple of ladies, so we've got some more people coming up. So I just want to be able to hype up the all the different people. Again, this has been it's been a lot of fun. The interviews aren't that long; they're usually around 30 minutes in length.
Cool.
The people get into it, and they always end up giving us their taco favorites. So just
You have to.
And I will say that, you know, being in Kansas City, Joshua had some really good takes, and also Mary Kay not only had some good takes herself, but she also, you know, the other thing, and, you know, me being a girl dad, I like to talk to women who've made it in a male dominated field.
Sure.
I just pointed out, you know, I asked her to just kind of give some advice to young women who are looking to get into a male dominated field. And she had some wonderful, wonderful words of wisdom that I'm making sure I'm passing on to my daughters and any other women who are going to be following us. So
definitely.
Right now you don't know your draft position.
No,
you know, you've looked at ADP, you know, we've been studying this thing for a while. If you had an ideal draft spot, where would you want to end up picking? Is there someone you want to pick? Yeah. Obviously, we're 1 to 12. It's 12 teams.
I don't know if it's single point. I mean, if I wasn't going to pick number one, is this overall as far as like the entire draft? It's a great question. Generally, I like being right in the middle, man. Like seven, eight, you know, it's because I like the first half comes through. Then you have a pick right there. Then you have, you know, the snake comes around. It's like when the snake goes around, you have like an equal number of picks, you know, coming around the snake. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it puts you in a good position. And that's what I have found. You know, I'm usually really comfortable whenever I have a draft pick around. I think I've had seven more times than I've had any other pick. And usually when I'm there, there's usually some really good stuff that I haven't really found that to be the case in other like another draft spots. I mean, that's just how it's kind of fallen for me. So yeah, I would prefer, you know, overall to kind of be in that sweet spot, like right around the middle.
So I like to be in the, you know, beginning or end.
Mm-hmm.
I love, you know, the back-to-back picks. I hate the waiting. I do hate the waiting.
Yeah.
You know,
either. That's why I like to be in the middle. It's like some waiting, but it's not like the super crazy waiting, you know? So it's like you don't wait as much. You wait this kind of like the same amount, front end, back end. So that's why I kind of like it, you know, like it that way.
I will say, yeah, it's pretty cool to see that kind of happen for us. I'm picking top four, and I'm like, I want McCaffrey.
Of course. The guy had a week, you know, a year off, and he's all healed up, and he's ready to dominate again. So yeah, who wouldn't want McCaffrey?
I'm hoping that, yeah, because you know what, I've got not quite asustado, but just a little
nervioso.
Yeah, a little nervioso at Dalvin Cook at number two, because he's had two back-to-back great seasons, and I worry about, you know, he's had a shoulder issue that could be something that comes back to him.
I'm at number two, I'm still looking at Derrick Henry, man. I mean, obviously McCaffrey's going first. I mean, I don't even know if I Derrick Henry to me is, I mean, he was the number one running back last year. Like, why wouldn't he be that again? I mean, maybe that's the question to ask. That's the rhetorical, you know, like, why wouldn't that just happen again for this year? Yeah. Okay. Christian McCaffrey's coming back. So does that mean Derrick Henry's going to be the number two running back? Because DBs are still terrified to tackle the guy. The guy's still getting yards after contact, like a monster. So, you know, just because Dalvin Cook is like the popular pick to go at number two, like I still love me some Derrick Henry at number two, and I would take him there all day.
Quick FYI, it was actually Alvin Kamara went RB1 last year. Because remember, he had that huge 6-touchdown game on Christmas that put him over the top.
Oh, no. Wait. So Derrick Henry was number one in something. Was it yards? I think maybe.
Yeah, he was number one in yards.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. 2,000 yards. Not RB1, but just most yards, you know. So obviously that translates to lots of fantasy points as well. But yeah. So I mean, I Alvin Kamara, that was just like a freakish game. You know, without that 6 TD game, he's not RB1. So you kind of like bell curve, you know what I mean? That one, you kind of throw that one out. That's a complete anomaly. So you throw that out technically without that game, or even if he has like a, you know, 3 TD game or a 2 TD game, which is more on par for Kamara than, right, you know, Derrick Henry's RB1. So that's why I say it, you know, in that way is like, I'm, you know, if I'm picking number two, I like Derrick Henry all day after McCaffrey. No problem.
I especially in our league, because we've got the archaic standard scoring that I keep trying to get Vic to change, but he won't.
So no PPR. So yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
But then that makes Derrick Henry valuable, and he does. I don't have it off the top of my head, but he does have a good closing schedule as usual.
When he just kills it, which is when there's playoffs. He blows up, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. You know, as we get into the show here, the Titans' offense is nothing to sneeze at, man. They're gonna once again put up some big numbers now with the addition of Mr. Jones there. So yeah, I see big things happening for the Titans' offense, and especially if they're going down to the wire in games with big leads. Derrick Henry's just going to chew up the clock and just and again, they still not going to want to tackle him at the end of the game, you know, so even more yards for him, I think so.
Well, yeah, he went for like, remember week 17, went for like 250 yards because they wanted to get him to get the 2,000 yards.
Yeah, the DBs are already making tee times, man. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't want to tackle Derrick Henry and get injured. And, you know, they want to go play golf.
No, not at all.
Late in the season, man. Like, so, you know, those teams that aren't going anywhere, just like, you know, let them go. Just let him score.
well, since we're talking about the Titans, let's talk some cheese man. So AJ Brown still recovering from his offseason knee surgery on both knees, but he's not worried. As he said, he's being impatient. He's not getting impatient, but he's getting excited for the season. He didn't participate in minicamp, but you're looking at. I mean, it's kind of like last season where he never practiced on Wednesday and sometimes he didn't, he only did walkthrough on Thursday. Mm-hmm. But you look at him, you just think, I don't know. I just get the feeling that he's going to be fine once training camp rolls around, and he's going to be there.
I mean, it wasn't major surgery, right? I mean, obviously he's having, double, procedures on both of his knees. It says what, like cleaning out some scar tissue or
probably cleaning out and just a little cleanup, a little tune-up for him. And,
right, exactly.
And to think that he had such a special season, 11 touchdowns, 1,075 yards receiving, he missed a couple of games and part of and the majority of a third game. And he did that, all that. I'm pumped for him. I think it's going to be a big, even with the Julio Jones addition, I'm still really excited about AJ Brown. Just very much excited.
Yep.
Going up a little north to Ohio, the Athletics, Paul Diener, he pointed out that he's got the belief that Joe Mixon's going to have the largest workload ever of his career. Wow. He thinks that he's going to get like 15 to 20 extra receptions this season because of the fact that Giovanni Bernard is gone. And, you sit there and like, yeah, they didn't really add anybody of significance. And Joe Mixon has the talent, and he's definitely, I still wonder if people who were drafting him last year are, and got burned, obviously, if they're just driving down his ADP right now. That to me is what, has me thinking about that, because right now I'm looking up his ADP right now. He is pick number 19. He's the 207. Mm-hmm. Which in the second round, I mean, that's pretty good. He's sandwiched in between, as far as running backs are concerned, between Cam Akers, Antonio Gibson above him, and Clyde Edwards Elaide below him.
Elaide,
yeah. So I just look at him. I was down on him earlier, and now I'm starting to get a little bit more hyped about him.
Okay. I mean,
how about you?
Is there a reason to believe, though, that with Joe Burrow coming back, that they're still not going to be this pass heavy offense? I mean, they got Ja'Marr Chase, they got T. Higgins there. I mean, why wouldn't – because, I mean, Joe Burrow, he slung the ball around. And, you know, to your point earlier, you know, guys that drafted Joe Mixon got burned, you know, because Cincinnati was such a pass-first offense. And, you know, Joe Burrow would run as well. So is there any reason to believe if just because a guy says, you know, yeah, even though he's, you know, he has the inside track that Joe Mixon is going to get, you know, this extra workload, you know, Giovanni Bernard is gone, et cetera. Why is there any reason that we should think that just because Giovanni Bernard is gone and it lends itself to, you know, we would think theoretically that because of that, there's a higher workload for Joe Mixon. But does that mean that why would Cincinnati change their offensive philosophy if they've been pass heavy, you know, and Joe Mixon didn't perform all that well last year and they didn't really run that much last year? Why would that just all of a sudden change this year? It doesn't seem like it would, especially adding Jamar Chase in the mix. One of Joe Burrow's best buddies, you know?
Well, I think they're still going to run the ball a lot. I mean, I think they're still going to throw the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And they're going to be a primarily pass heavy. They're going to be a very pass heavy team.
Sure.
I do think it's the sheer numbers and opportunity. And I think just the fact that when it comes to, you know, total workload, Joe Mixon's going to be their best guy. And they're just going to have a tough time giving the ball to somebody else unless he needs a breather. So, you know, just because of the fact that, you know, I look at this and I just think, you know what? He's still young enough. He might have a good season in him, especially because it's mostly because of the receiving. And that to me is the big thing. So that's what's got me a little pumped up about him.
Okay.
It's starting to get pumped up about him. So,
yeah.
So, staying with the Athletic, Joe Buscaglia, you know, said that Zach Moss could take over the backfield. You know, and it's up to him. You know, obviously it's second year player. Ricky loves to give me crap about year two, you know, my love for year two players, but that is when they have the big jump. You know, I look at him. I mean, I was not impressed with him last year. Where, I don't know. Where did you feel? Where were you on Zach Moss?
I had him on my team. And I remember, I believe I think I dropped him late in the season. So yeah, I just remember not being that impressed with Zach Moss. If Joe Buscaglia is saying that he's, you know, in position to take over the backfield, you know, that, I guess that's saying something, but I just remember, you know, that he gave me a couple goose eggs that there's some really, you know, I had faith in him to put up some numbers for me and he just, you know, crapped the bed. So I don't know. I'm going to have to do a little bit of research on that and take a deep dive there. But he, yeah, you know, recency bias, right? He was on my team and he kind of burned me a little bit. So I don't know.
I think the fact that there's going to be training and not just a normal training camp, but there's also going to be preseason games. I think we'll get an idea by how much he and Devin Singletary get used. Mm-hmm. And you know, and if we actually get to see the both of them playing the games, are they gonna see some carries? And what do those carries look like? What is their, you know, do they have explosiveness? So I'm gonna really keep an eye on this because you know, he's going later, he's going ninth or tenth round right now in 12 team formats. So I look at him and I'm just like, you know, he might be kind of like that guy, you know, that fourth or fifth running back that you get when you're in 16 rounds, that you wanted.
No, sure. I mean, nice numbers. And you're like, whoa, you know, but yeah, he'll be a late pick for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our last bit, Mike Reese, the reporter for ESPN in New England, said he sees that Damien Harris is going to be the Patriots' number one running back. Calling it pretty decisive. You know, he did dominate the carries most of the season last year from weeks 4 to 13 when he was healthy. I do still like Ramondre Stevenson. I don't know about Sony Michel. Sony Michel seems to be fading away. Some of the
injuries, which is weird because Sony Michel came in with a lot of hype.
It's mutual,
you know, and it's a friend, right? And to just fade, you know, in a Belichick offense is just. It just doesn't really make sense. It almost seems like there's like something wrong with him, like an injury that maybe we don't know about, which Belichick is famous for hiding injuries, right? So
yeah,
who knows? You know, who knows? Sony Michel, I would have thought that by now he would have blown up, and it just hasn't happened. It's just really weird because in college he was pretty dominant, pretty strong, really, really, really good running back in college. And it should have translated to some degree in the pros, but we just haven't seen it yet. So I'm a little bit surprised.
I'm fired up. I do think that they're going to be a run heavy team. And I think Harris is going to be a guy that gets, he's going to be kind of like that middle round guy, kind of, you know, fifth, sixth round that maybe could surprise. But again, you know, the other thing is trying to predict Belichick doing what, you
that's
know,
that's the thing. I think most people would probably stay away from any, you know, any of the running backs on the Patriots, you know, regardless of what anybody says, even Mike Reese from ESPN, because it's, I mean, that you know, drop of a hat, Belichick can just completely change his philosophy, you know, and he's been known for that, you know. You know, 1 weekend it's, you know, Sony Michel, then it's Damien Harris, then it's like, you know, wait, who, like, you know, Burkhead,
Dan Woodhead,
what
was it, Josiah Gray? Jonah Gray.
Yes.
Like he scores four touchdowns, and like the next week he's late to practice, and he's benched.
I think most serious fantasy players are pretty terrified of any, you know, really sticking their neck out to go high on any Patriots running back. So I think, you know, I think Patriots running backs generally fall pretty late because of that. So, I mean, if you get him at a value pick, you know, maybe, but it's still, there's no guarantees that any Patriots running back that you pick is actually going to get any, you know, any good run. So.
Yeah, it's hard. I think that's going to be a tough offense, because also you've got the two tight ends that are, you know, with Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, are they going to cannibalize each other?
Belichick loves the two TE sets, so that's all day.
Listen, you and I both know he could give two craps about your fantasy team or my fantasy team.
Less than that.
Nada.
Less than that, man.
Nada. He doesn't give a caca for it.
Yeah,
so,
he doesn't. He probably doesn't even. Yeah, the word fantasy football, that term doesn't resonate with Bill Belichick at all.
He don't care. He goes like this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Zero.
Yeah, that's no.
Zero.
Six rings.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And a couple with the New York Giants. So,
yeah.
So, hey, well, let's get into our main event.
Main event. Ding, ding, ding.
Los Underrated. You know, last week we talked about the underrated, the overrated and overhyped players last week. And, you know, it was very interesting. So this week we're going al otro lado, the underrated players.
We
looked at where players are going in ADP and why they're waiting so long. And Hector, you were the first one to throw a player out. So lead us off with, it seems like we're talking about this team a lot today.
Yes, my pick for the most underrated, for whatever reason, Ryan Tannehill, Tennessee Titans. So currently he's going QB 14, which is what? Ninth round, 909. What? He's going after, don't ask me why, he's going after Tom Brady. He's going after Joe Burrow. He's going after Matt Stafford. And he's got, you know, he just picked up Julio Jones. So he's still got Derrick Henry, who, I mean, from what I saw last year, it just seems what the data is showing is that Derrick Henry is becoming a little bit more and more ingrained into the pass attack here and there. I mean, it's obviously not anything super significant, but the guy's going to catch some passes. And anytime Derrick Henry has the ball, you know, he's like a bowling ball, you know, so you can just watch out. So, you know, even if Tannehill throws a couple of dink and ducks to Derrick Henry, that guy's going to go for yards after the catch for sure. You know, you got AJ Brown. Yes, he had a couple of knee procedures. You know, I don't think anyone has any big issue there as far as, you know, impact to what he's going to do this year. He's a beast, and one more year under his belt of experience, you know, one more year of rapport with Ryan Tannehill, and that just only bodes well for the Titans offense and Ryan Tannehill. You know, Julio Jones being added to the mix is just, you know, what can you say? You know, it's just one more veteran. AJ Brown's going to learn from him. Julio Jones is still there, going to be catching passes, catching touchdowns. And you know, so I can't understand going QB 14. I mean, in a 12-team this means that Ryan Tannehill is your second quarterback, which to me, that's crazy. I mean, I would have no problem at all. I don't think most people have any problem at all with Tannehill as a starting QB on most fantasy teams. So I don't get that. So underrated there. He's still playing four games against the Jags defense, against the Texans defense, and he did some big things against, especially against Texans last year. There were two games he had four TD games, and just as I mentioned, he had four TDs against Jacksonville. He had four TDs against the Texans. That's not too many QBs do that. Tannehill did that twice. So, I mean, he has the skills to do it. He also can run. He's going to give you some rushing yards there. You know, he ran for 266 yards, scored seven rushing TDs, and then, of course, his 33 passing TDs, only seven picks, which is great. You know, it's a nice little ratio there. 65%, you know, pass completion percentage. I don't get – the underration, if that's a word, we can invent that. And then, you know, he was QB2 weeks 5 to 17. Only Deshaun Watson was better than Ryan Tannehill. That's 5 to 17. That's a lot of weeks, you know? So, you know, that says a lot. That says a lot about him. It says a lot about AJ Brown. It says a lot about, you know, Derrick Henry as well. You know, it being a little bit more active in the passing game. So, you know, keep your eyes on Ryan Tannehill. If he's in your league and people are poo-pooing Ryan Tannehill, you know, you might be able to get a nice value pick there. If you wait just right, you know, people, if he's going ninth round ADP, you can pick him up 7 or 8 and you'll be fine.
You know, I look at him and I don't get why he's waiting so long. You know, he was the QB2 from weeks 5 to 17 last year. And you know, he had a big, you know, big week 4 to 17, even with Derrick Henry having a big week running for 250 yards. So yeah. He's a guy who's going to blow up against bad defenses. And again, he added two guys. So
I mean, ADP wise, Ryan Tannehill is one pick before Trevor Lawrence. What? I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, playing fantasy football for this amount of time, I don't get that at all. You know, Ryan Tannehill is proven. You know, we know what he can do on the NFL field with the big boys. You know, and to be going on average one pick only before Trevor Lawrence, to me is just mind boggling. So
yeah, I don't get it. And another like guy, another guy who is kind of low on the boards, and you know, I put him on here. Maybe it's because we just talked to Mary Kay. I just talked to Mary Kay Cabot, and she you know, she had some good things to say about Baker Mayfield. His jump. He's not going to run the ball a lot. He did have 54 rush attempts, but it was only for 165 yards. I had one touchdown, but he really improved as the week went on. You know, Pro Football Focus ranked him as the number two quarterback in QB rating from week 7 to the end of the season through the playoffs.
Wow. So why is he going in round 12?
just because he's not I think it's because he's not a running quarterback, but I'm thinking that, you know, on two QB leagues, this is a guy I want. He's not throwing many interceptions. You know, he only threw 8 interceptions last year in almost 500 attempts. You know, his completion percentage was 62%. I think that's going to go up because there's more familiarity with the offense. That's the big thing, the familiarity with the offense. I mean, he was good late in, you know, when he was QB10 from week 11 to 17, I mean, his completion percentage was pushing 65%. He threw for almost 2,000 yards in 6 games. And, you know, he threw for 11 touchdowns. That's where he had 200-300 yard games. I mean, and he was really good. And I look at him as someone that I want him because I look at the options around him. He gets Odell Beckham Jr. back. And again, Mary Kay, she debunked that whole theory that that the Browns were better without OBJ. No. Eso no es cierto. They got better because they got more experience, because they hadn't practiced a lot together. And it just so happened that he wasn't available during that time. this is going to be different. He's going to get integrated. He's going to be back. I think he's going to be, you know, with I think he's going to be underrated good. Jarvis Landry's healthy, going to be healthy from the start of the season. So, you know, you look at that, you look at the number one offensive line. I mean, this is it. Yeah. I'm looking at why is he going behind Trevor Lawrence? Why is he going behind Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Watson, who we don't know how many games Deshaun Watson is going to play this season, if any, and he's going behind Matt Ryan. So vamos a ver.
I mean, anytime you have a top rated offensive line, that automatically has to give your QB at least a couple of spots up, you know, up on the ADP, right? I mean, you know, that automatically, if he's back there with time, you know, and we've seen Baker Mayfield, we know what the guy can do. You know, we know, you know, last year he proved me wrong. I was a little down on him going into the season last season, but he definitely proved me wrong. He can definitely, you know, he can do some things back there. So if he's at the top rated offensive line, you know, I think things are definitely looking up for Baker Mayfield. So yeah, to be in that ADP, he's definitely underrated.
And you know what? I think he's also suffering from the fact that he was picked in the same draft as Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So that kind of I think that hurts him. I think I think, you know, he hasn't had an MVP season like Lamar Jackson. He hasn't had an extraordinary breakout like Josh Allen. So I mean,
maybe this is the year.
Maybe this is his breakout year. Yeah, vamos a ver, vamos a ver. Yeah. Again, second year in the Kevin Stefanski offense, it could be the breakout. Could be the breakout.
That I mean, it was a huge. I mean, last year was a huge improvement from the year before. So if he could do that again and build on that, that could be huge.
So Ricky, you know, we're still waiting for him. So yeah, he's obviously on Latino. He's obviously on Mexican time, but heck, we'll skip over this guy and why don't you jump into the next guy on the list?
Chase Claypool. Hey, I don't know. Well, I understand that there was a lot of folks that were down on Ben Roethlisberger that, you know, they were hating on him. He's, you know, he's washed up, he's done. But then we saw, you know, some nice flashes of greatness last year. I mean, with Chase Claypool, especially. He's my underrated next pick. Currently going in the seventh round, 702 wide receiver. And let's just see who some of these guys are around him, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. So Chase Claypool is at 702. Devontae Smith is the next receiver at 704, and he's a rookie.
Yeah, come on, man. Well, come on. That's almost insulting.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. So Chase Claypool, I mean, the guy, what was the game last year he had? Was it three or four touchdowns last year? Was it four?
Cuatro.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, how does that happen? Especially in an offense, you have Deontay Johnson, you had Juju there, and, you know, Chase Claypool was just able to get open when Big Ben needed him. You know, he was able to and he's a big body. The guy is built. You know, he's not this, you know, this little speedster, you know, Darren Sproles kind of guy. Chase Claypool is a big body and he's quick and he's able to get open. And Big Ben obviously loves him. Anytime you throw four TDs to one guy, you know, in a game, that's saying something pretty significant. Like, okay, the rest of you guys, like, you guys can get open too. Like, this guy was the only guy that was open right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and then there was Deontay with some, he had some dropping issues, some butterfinger issues last year. So, I mean, Chase Claypool, he could definitely rise to the top, you know, this year. I mean, after what he did last year, there's no reason to think. I mean, yeah, he'll be fighting with Deontay. Deontay's a speedster, you know, but if he continues to have some of those drops, these issues that he did last year, Chase Claypool will definitely take a big jump up. Last year, 109 targets, 873 yards. But again, he was, you know, new to the game. You know, he's just kind of learning and understanding the Pittsburgh offense. But again, just blew out with four TDs in the game. You know, it's, you know, 6'4". He's, you know, he's scored at least 10 TDs as a rookie. I mean, come on. Chase Claypool, man. He had 11 TDs last year. I mean, two rushing, nine receiving. The fact that he's going, you know, like I said, he's going right there with who did I say? Where's he at? He's with
Devontae Smith.
Devontae.
He's behind Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and DJ Chark.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, I'll take him. I'll take him. I'll take him ahead of all of those guys.
Yes. Yeah. If he's falling that far, Yeah, wide receiver 30, Chase Claypool. Yeah, you know, Big Ben, I still have confidence in him. You know, he started off slow last year, kind of got out of the box, out of the gate, you know, with a little bit of mud on his shoes, you know. So, but, you know, he picked it up, and I think he'll have another good year this year. I think and Claypool, he's underrated.
And it was pretty – it was very interesting. And, oh, the other thing is he was wide receiver 23 last year, and they basically stopped throwing to him from weeks 12 to 16, where Coach Mike Tomlin was trying to guard against the rookie wall. So when he wasn't saying that he was tired or anything like that, and then in week 17, he went off for 100 yards. And then he was good in that playoff game against the Browns when, you know, everybody – when they were chasing 100 points, it seemed like. But to me, the big thing, you know – I found this tweet from @GuruFantasyWorld, where there are only three wide receivers in the history of the NFL who measured at least 6'4", and scored 10-plus TDs as a rookie. Randy Moss, who you mentioned, Mike mm-hmm. Evans, and Chase Claypool. So,
that's pretty good company there.
Really good company.
Hall of Famer Randy Moss.
Yeah, and Mike Evans. And
Mike Evans could be destined on his way there as well. Possibly.
Could be on that trajectory. I look at him. He's got power. He's got aggressiveness. He's got top notch speed. I mean, his 40 time was 4.33, and it really translated on the field. So that to me is really special. I think this guy is special. I think this is DK Metcalf 2.0. I'm looking at.
That's fair.
In 17 games, I'm looking at like 125 targets for this guy, and then we could see a wonderful season for him. So next guy is kind of interesting because he was the RB10 last year, Kareem Hunt, and he's going off as the RB23 right now in the fourth round, 4.07. Wow. He's the RB10 last year with, you know, he had 841 yards rushing, and he had another 304. So he had over 1,100 all-purpose yards and 13 touchdowns. So I'm sorry, 11 touchdowns, six mm-hmm. rushing, five receiving.
Yeah.
And I look at this, what has changed about his situation? It's still Nick Chubb sharing. They're still sharing the ball. They're both going to get, I mean, obviously Chubb missed a few games last year. I think it was three or four games last year. And Kareem Hunt played, you know, was kind of like the lead caballo during that point. Didn't really have dominant games during that point, but still he dominated the carries. But I just look at the fact, to me, the big statistic with him, because it is a couple of big ones. Receptions, 38 receptions. That's huge. But I also, one of the big things was even with Nick Chubb there, who is one of the best all around runners, running backs in the NFL, Kareem Hunt still got 42 red zone carries. So he didn't get all those in 4 weeks, and he got seven touchdowns out of those. I just look at him. He's going behind James Robinson, Miles Sanders, Chris Carson, J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift. I mean, he's a guy. If I'm going,
that's a head scratcher to go behind Dobbins and Swift. And I think most people maybe don't even realize that he was RB10 last year. I think that's just maybe they're not even doing their homework to understand that. Because if you would have just said, all right, the guy that was RB10 last year, where are you going to take him? Oh, man, are you going to take him before Dobbins? I'm like, well, heck yeah. Are you going to take the RB10 of last year before Swift? Yeah, heck yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just seems like people don't realize or understand that Kareem Hunt was the RB10 last year. Because to your point, what's changed? You know, he's still Chubb is still the lead caballo, and Kareem Hunt is still there doing what Kareem Hunt does. There's no reason to think that he can't be RB10 again. There's not, you know what I mean? Like, so why would he be going behind all these guys like Dobbins and Swift? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I look at him. I think he's going to be a wonderful pick for this year. I think he's still going to get plenty of targets. Everything is there for him to have another really good season. Again, the number one offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus, this guy is a baller. And he's a guy where if early on, so many people try to hammer running back right off the bat. If I'm picking the latter part of the first round, I'm maybe looking at grabbing a Travis Kelce or a Davante Adams or a Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, one of those guys coming back with a running back and saying, you know what, if Kareem Hunt's going to be there in the fourth round, I'll take him and I'll be very happy, especially in a PPR format.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want me to take this next one or you want to go?
Go for it. Yeah. Go ahead, take it. I'll add color.
Cause because we're brown.
I've been in the sun a little bit more than you probably. So
a little bit. So this is a guy I'm really fired up about, David Montgomery. He was the RB4 last year, 1,070 yards rushing. He had 68 targets, 54 receptions. He had 438 receiving yards. He had a total of 10 touchdowns. He was phenomenal at the end of the season. He was the RB2 from weeks 11 to 17 with he had 8 total touchdowns. He had 598 rushing yards, 226 receiving yards. I mean, it was a cupcake schedule. I mean, we all talked about it. We all looked at it and we were like, oh, my Dios mio, this is going to be good for it. This is gonna be good for him.
Yes.
But you know what? You still got to do it. You still got to play.
Yeah, for sure.
And I look at him and I look at the guy who was playing at the end of the season. He looked like a completely different running back from the guy who was a little tentative in 2019. Didn't start the year all too hot. Obviously, he was battling a groin injury to start the season. But I look at him. There's so much to like. I think people are jumping off the bandwagon because of the fact that Tariq Cohen is coming back, but he's coming back from ACL surgery. So
no guarantees. There's no guarantees at all that Tariq Cohen, and I think we've talked about it before, right? You know, coming back from an injury like that usually takes, maybe up to a full season to actually really get back, to where you were before. So is there really a reason to believe that a guy like David Montgomery, who you said was RB2 for all those weeks, who ended the season at RB4, why would he not just keep the lead role? You know, especially if Tariq Cohen is coming back from a horrific injury, like a torn ACL, why wouldn't he just, like you say, if Montgomery was timid, in 2019, why not build on his confidence? Say, you were the man last year. You're still going to be the guy. Just keep it moving. And then, put in Tariq Cohen as necessary, plug and play. And then if Tariq Cohen has some blow up games, now you have a reason to tell David Montgomery, like, hey, man, this guy's not performing you. Like, it is what it is. As opposed to just saying, hey, David, thanks for what you did for us. But, Tariq Cohen's back from his injury. Now he's in number one again. And now, yes, David Montgomery's a grown guy, but that can impact your confidence, especially like you said, he's timid coming in and, if you just roll with it, if his confidence is up, he was RB4, you roll with that, just keep it going.
And, he's 24, that prime age. He was number 4 in rush attempts last year. He was, to me, a big thing was he was number 5 in yards after contact, 590 yards. He was number 3 in broken tackles.
That's huge.
I just looked at the guy who was running at the end of the season. He was running with confidence. He was running with power. He was running with decisiveness. I mean, yeah. I just really liked. He was number 7 in red zone carries with 447 and got 8 touchdowns on those carries. So he's hitting pay dirt. Yeah. I'm looking at this guy. Maybe he started off slowly because he had that groin injury in training camp last year.
Sure.
He's going behind Chris Carson, Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs, who I do like this year, but I think I still like David Montgomery more.
Jacobs has to show something. We need to see something from Josh Jacobs before I'm taking him over David Montgomery. Because what did Josh Jacobs end the season at? So if David Montgomery ends at RB, RB4, where's Josh Jacobs at? He ended, he's way down the list, right?
Yeah, Jacobs was like number – where was he? He was number 8 last year.
Okay, so yeah, so, I mean – So for Jacobs to be going ahead of him still,
RB21. That's what we're talking about with David Montgomery.
That's crazy.
You don't know. That to me is way too late. Third round.
21. That's wild. That's wild.
He's another guy that I look at and it's just kind of like he's just too, he's a lot better than what he's getting drafted. Yeah, and again, he's another guy that I think of, there's so much talk in the fantasy industry right now that there's the running back dead zone, which starts like the third round. You want to have your running backs by that point. Mm-hmm. I'm not scared about David Montgomery. I'm not scared about Kareem Hunt. I these guys are muy en vivo for me. So I'm good on those.
Agreed.
Well, we got one more guy to talk about, and this was Ricky's pick, Will Fuller.
Where are you, Rick?
Yeah, Rick, te necesitamos. Well, we're gonna take this one. Yeah. He's going off as the wide receiver 36, the eighth round, 804. And I look at him. He was suspended last year. He was suspended after he had a huge Thanksgiving game. He caught 6 of 7 targets for 171 yards and 2 touchdowns.
2 TDs, yes.
He was phenomenal, but he was suspended for PEDs. At that point he'd had a great season, 879 mm-hmm. receiving yards, 53 receptions, 8 touchdowns. He did not miss any time. He did have one bad game where he had a donut, but which makes him doing this. But you look at him and he's going to Miami.
He's still Will Fuller. He's still Will Fuller.
Yeah. And he's still Will Fuller. He's still a downfield threat. And Tua thrived on throwing downfield when he was at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked so much about him needing weapons. That's why they drafted Jalen Waddle where they did. That's why they signed Will Fuller to the 1 year deal. And I like that 1 year deal. I like that 1 year deal a lot because it gives Will Fuller incentive to go out and earn that next contract. And to do that. Totally. So you put that out there. And to me, we talk about our compadre, Dr. Edwin Porras, so much. You know, he and he was on his podcast this week. He talked with Dr. Matthew Betts. They talked about the fact that there's no evidence that PEDs help soft tissue injuries, which is what he had before. He did a lot of pliability work, a lot of stretching, a lot of flexibility, and that had to have been, he changed so much about what he was doing for him, how he trained. And I just look at this as, I don't know if he's going to be the wide receiver 8, but my goodness, wide receiver 36.
36, that's just crazy. I mean, who did Tua have that was anywhere near Will Fuller in the past?
Not
like,
yet.
And exactly. And that's, to your point, it's like, Tua knows how to throw the deep ball. Tua knows how to get the ball to guys like Will Fuller. You know, he's shown that, and we know that Tua can do that. We've seen him do that. So now that he has a guy that can do that, Will Fuller was catching bombs all day from Deshaun Watson. We've seen that plenty of times. So now, you just plug and play Tua in there, and you got to be salivating at the idea of, that connection between Tua and Will Fuller. To your point again, it's a 1 year contract, so Will Fuller is going to be working his tail off to make that money. So he's really going to show out, and do everything he can to get those balls and make those catches and score those touchdowns, get that money. And there's no reason to think that he couldn't do it because he's going to be the lead guy. He's going to be the most experienced receiver, with the most talent, right? Going into next season. So why wouldn't he be the number one, that Tua's looking for? Hit him. Tua's going to go for it. He's definitely going to take those shots to Will Fuller. And if he catches any of those balls, there's going to be scores there. There's going to be yards there. Will Fuller's going to be putting up points. So wide receiver 36, eighth round, that's just crazy.
And, I think people are talking about the fact that he's going to be missing a game. So maybe that's driving down his draft position. But fine. One game. No, come on.
That's so nothing.
If you could tell me that you could get last year's wide receiver 8 for the first 11 games through 11 games last season, through 12 weeks, I'll take that all day.
Didn't Justin Herbert miss one game last year?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he still finished like the quarterback, 8 or something like
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Put up a monster year, right? Broke records and stuff. So yeah, missing one game doesn't really mean anything from a fantasy standpoint. No, so good monster numbers. It's not
there's so many great receivers out there. You just take you just the guy who would have been your third or fourth receiver, you end up putting him in for the week. So, but I do like the weapons in Miami. You got we talked about Waddle. They got Devontae Parker one more time, who was banged up throughout the time that that Tua was out there. Mike Gesicki, who suffered an injury late in the season. So I'm excited about Tua from a football standpoint, and I think he's going to make these guys fantasy relevant.
For sure.
I don't know how much he's going to run next year, and I don't know if that's going to make him more valuable. He's a guy I like in two quarterback formats, but I think these guys are going to eat.
Yes, all day. Oh, man.
Well, Primo, speaking of eating, I think it's dinner time over here.
Time to go get some tortillas and some carne asada.
baby, that looks good. That sounds good. It's some curry over here. So we got, Mexican curry. So vámonos. So everybody, Ricky, we miss you again. So, we'll get you next week. But Primo, eso es todo for our show. Yeah, thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure our independent podcast gets out to the Familia community. Please also make sure you're following us on YouTube. But yeah, you can follow, you could subscribe, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can find original content at familiaffb.com. Hector, where are they finding you on Twitter?
Was it right here? What the heck? At what the heck? Two T's.
Muy bien. And you can find me at Jorge Martin 17. I'll get the pointing down correctly.
Yeah, I know, it's like backwards. it's like combing your hair in the mirror.
Yep. Yeah, I know. Combing my hair. Hey, remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Familia FFB, as well as our Familia FFB Facebook page. Again, everybody, have a safe and wonderful 4th of July. Enjoy the fireworks. Make sure to drive home safely. I've got a designated driver because our Solana is 17. So got to love that. So Primo, salud to you. And remember everybody, todos somos familia.
Adios amigos. Salud.